Our emotions change the color of our thinking. Can one think clearly when in a state of emotion? That is the question we must ask ourselves. When we realize that emotion prevents us from seeing clearly, from thinking accurately, from hearing acutely, we find that emotion reduces our senses to a mere fraction of what they should be when fully alert and free from inhibitions. When in a state of emotion, can you think clearly? You've only got to ask yourself this question. Then you will discern what you're doing. And once we discern what we're doing, we tend to drop it. Not that we fight the thing that we are doing, but we begin to understand it. A habit is not overcome by fighting the habit, but by understanding it. Emotion can create physical sensation where there is no physical sensation, where there is no physical cause for it. Emotion will also cut off sensation of a physical injury. This I have demonstrated myself, and I'm sure that many of you have experienced the same, perhaps in other ways. The footballer will play with a broken rib right up to the end of the game, but when the game is over and the emotions are due, pain is registered severely. I can remember very well in my own life, the one that gave me the greatest experience was this. It was when I was wounded in the intestine, in the stomach. All the time I didn't know that I was wounded, except I felt as something scratching me. Then I felt as if something was running down my leg. Then I began to think, what's wrong? Must be a pin or a hairpin or something like that, or a safety pin, because sometimes you lost your buttons and all the rest of it, and you tied yourself up with a safety pin. So I thought it was that safety pin tied up inside. So I had a look and found my intestine sticking out like this. Then I felt pain. What I thought in my mind was what I had heard about other people who had been wounded in such a way was that they never got over it. Well, the pain was so excruciating. And yet before, I had no pain at all, because of the emotion, because of the tenseness, the condition of the mind. And it's the same with most people. When one is in a state of rage, a state of temporary insanity is often produced. Thus we see that the emotional habit pattern is stimulated while reason is totally eclipsed. You never get into a rage when you reason things, because reason prevents you from getting into a rage. It is when reason is totally eclipsed, then you enter into this emotion of heat, rage, anger. These things destroy you. They upset the whole equilibrium of the organism. Cell structure of the body is affected as well as the mind. These habit patterns are established in the cerebellum. Right in this organism at the back here, these habits are established and then misbehavior begins. In one case, pain may be inhibited when there is cause for it, and in another case, pain is created where there is no cause. The question is, how is one to deal with these conflicting problems? We must treat the cerebellum through controlled and scientific relaxation and divine reason, which balances the reflexes from brain to body and vice versa. We must treat the cerebellum through controlled and scientific relaxation and divine reason, which balances the reflexes from brain to body and vice versa. When there is a habit pattern established, especially emotional habit pattern established in the cerebellum, it begins to outpicture in the body in some form or another, in inhibition, perhaps, or in a sensation. It may irritate the mucous membrane of the bowel. Nerves there may become inflamed as to create an ulcer. Your bowels may take on the form of inflammation because the nerves in the bowel become irritated through this emotional habit pattern and you have a mucus colitis. You can have heart trouble. You can have a nervous heart that goes at 130, 140 beats a minute. You can have blood pressure where the muscles surround the blood vessels contract, become tense, and therefore the force of the blood into the extremities, and you have blood pressure. You can have a skin trouble, an irritation of the skin where the nerves become irritated on the skin. You can have all these things which are produced by this misbehavior in the cerebellum. How are you to eliminate it? You can absolutely eliminate it perfectly through controlled, scientific, conscious relaxation of the muscles of the body. Now, when you give a message through your cerebrum here, that is a suggestion. If you suggest to the cerebellum strongly, the cerebellum will rebel and say no. Just the same as you do. If I tell you or anybody tells you to do that at once, you immediately rebel. You stop and you wonder whether you will do it or not. It's only you do it because it may be the boss or it may be the wife. Therefore, you stop for a moment, but the first is resistance. But the cerebellum in the back here, this brain here, it says no. It won't respond to strong suggestion, but it will respond to unobtrusive suggestion. Suggestions that easily form. And I tell you this, that relaxation is the finest of all suggestion because it's smooth, it's easy, it's suggestion in its finest form. And what you do, you get your muscles relaxed. It sends a message to the cerebellum. The cerebellum then accepts the message and says, I'm relaxed, I'm relaxed. That's carried on then to the cerebrum. And the cerebrum then knows what's going on. The habit pattern begins to break up because habit patterns are tension. Whether they exist on the muscle outside, whether they exist in the muscles inside, or whether they exist in the nervous system in the form of some inhibition. You can have thousands of inhibitions of different forms, but they are all brought about by the same thing, this habit pattern. We saw in our last lesson how thought, emotion, and sensation was linked together. Firstly, our thought, whether it is conscious or unconscious, has an emotional effect which in turn affects the cerebellum, causing misbehavior there. This misbehavior we find in the form of impulses through the motor or sensory nerves, and which in some cases can cause an inhibitory effect, immobilizing all the muscles. This we call hysterical paralysis. The motor and sensory nerves are set in motion. These motor and sensory nerves run down the spine. They're in different parts of the body. They belong to what they call the sympathetic nervous system. These substations or subbrains are linked through the cerebellum into the cerebrum. When the cerebrospinal system sends a message through the body to be expressed in some particular organ, whatever the organ may be, it must go through these motor and sensory nerves to be carried into the sympathetic. So the sympathetic nervous system, which controls all the muscular mobilization and cell mobilization in the body, is carried through these motor and sensory nerves. Supposing now that you have, through all these motor and sensory nerves, a complete inhibition, you find that you're paralyzed. I have seen people entirely paralyzed through it. I saw a woman once who was paralyzed through an emotional habit pattern. She was perfectly well, a healthy woman. She had 7 children. We all went our different ways. She was left at home by herself. She was depressed. She wanted her children round her again. And her letters, desires, and hopes were useless. But through the continuous emotional expression in our own nature, the desire at least for some of her children round her again, she became paralyzed. She went to bed, she couldn't move her hands or her limbs. There was no outward sign to show that she should be paralyzed. Her blood pressure was all right, and everything else seemed perfect. But here was a complete immobilization of the muscles through what we would say an emotional habit pattern. The desire was so strong. The emotion helped this woman to bring about the things she desired, and her children all came round home because she was paralyzed. Everybody was sorry for her, and she was thoroughly enjoying herself. The thought of her paralysis entirely disappeared because her desire was fulfilled. But when children had to go back to their places of work because they had to work, they had families and they had jobs, the mother was left alone again with her paralysis. She did not know how paralysis. When I showed her that it was nothing more than an emotional habit pattern, and she herself brought it about, and she herself alone can cure herself. Therefore, through direction, in the few days she was up out of bed, as good and as well as ever she was, for the simple reason that she saw what was happening. And through proper divine reasoning, relaxation of all the muscles, and that suggestion which is smooth and silent, taking off the brakes, then when she took off the brakes and understood that she herself put them on, she got well. The Father did the work. Life is always endeavoring to express itself in its perfect nature. That is one of many I could show. I could relate hundreds of cases where these emotional habit patterns have been the means, in some cases, of creating miserable lives. But that miserable life can become a very enjoyable life, and the experience passed through will stand in good stead for the remainder of their life. They will know the cause of their troubles. In another way, It may stimulate muscular activity in the form of St. Vitus dance. This we call hysterical muscular reaction. Some call it nervous tic. I had a boy who came down from Rhodesia. He'd been in hospital for some time here with St. Vitus dance. The father brought him to me because he contracted this St. Vitus dance in the school and he was taken to the hospital. They couldn't do anything for him. They gave me electric treatment and all that sort of thing, but he was just saved when he came out. Now the father wanted to take him home to Rhodesia and he took him to me first on Friday. He couldn't put his hand to his mouth. He couldn't tie his shoes. He couldn't put his coat on his clothes. He couldn't dress himself. He was really in a dreadful state. I talked to the boy and I found out the cause of his trouble was nervousness in the school. He couldn't do certain subjects. And because of this, he had created this emotional habit pattern which caused this muscular activity. After I had shown him the cause of his trouble, I relaxed his muscles completely. When I relaxed his muscles to begin with, it was still shaking. But as I gradually relaxed him more and more, I found that the whole of his body became quiet. I left them relaxed there for some time, for half an hour or so. When I came back, he got up. He could put on his clothes, he could tie his tie, tie his shoes, and he said, I haven't done this for months. One treatment was sufficient to reduce this habit pattern to practically nil. So the father said, well, I went back with him. I said, no, you can take him home now to Rhodesia. Follow my instructions and he'll be entirely and completely well. There are hundreds of people who are suffering from these emotional habit patterns and yet they do not know how they come about. It can make you forget your name of where you live. It can make you quite oblivious to the fact that you owe the bank a large overdraft. It's quite convenient sometimes. It can make you stammer and stutter. It makes you feel that you cannot remain in an enclosed space or in a crowd, etc., etc. There are hundreds of ways that this mischievous misbehavior of the cerebellum makes your cerebrum feel what it feels, and that is how you know what is going on. And it is this. I remember a long time ago, some of you will also remember the time that Chloe started his campaign of suggestion, which was in the school of Nancy in France. You can remember the time when across the front page was Coe with his suggestion, day by day and every way I get better and better. That was his formula. Now Coe found very clearly that in the first place he tried suggestion. But he found also that direct suggestion made to the opposite of the trouble intensified the trouble. But he also found that when the idea of the trouble was left alone entirely and a formula was created such as day by day in every way I'm getting better and better. But in the way that it had to be said, Coe said you've got to lie down. Let yourself go into a dreamy state. And as you're in that dreamy state, say those words day by day in every way, I get better and better. That was the formula. And thousands of people at that time when it was fresh and new got better of all the complaints. Now, I know dozens of people who have got better of the complaint from that time. But since that time has become too common, congestion has become so common. The reason why that it happened was this, that when the passion relaxed, went into this dreamy state, the idea of the trouble seemed to pass away. And then saying, every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. It did not stimulate the trouble by a strong suggestion, but with that smooth, silent, unobtrusive suggestion, the brakes were taken off, and nature did her work. So you see, clearly and distinctly, that as we grow into this knowledge, the same principle is involved. The suggestion had to become utter suggestion before it had any effect at all on the individual. So therefore, no suggestion of any kind can be of any use to you unless it becomes utter suggestion. And utter suggestion can only come through either the desire of the individual towards the end suggested, or when there is the quiet, smooth, unobtrusive suggestion given, where it enters into the mind, and there becomes utter suggestion unknowing to you. That's what relaxing the muscles do to break up your emotional habit patterns, and they dissolve away with the great help of divine reason. Divine reason is this. In knowing the truth about yourselves, not something that is outside yourselves, but the truth about yourselves, knowing that life itself is the only living thing. The body does not exist apart from life. Body is the vehicle that life has created for its own expression. And without the body, life could not be expressing itself now in this form. Therefore, it created it for its own self-expression on the physical plane, the nerves, the brain, and everything. There is no other power that could do so. Therefore, we see, the body does not exist apart from life. So life is the predominant thing, the actual reality, and in that is your consciousness. Consciousness is in life. Life and consciousness are synonymous. When you recognize this, then you will see where the source of your thinking comes. And through relaxation, outcropping, as we will learn later on, because I'm not going to take you into that field just now, but we uncover the various layers of consciousness until we reach at a stage where we find pure consciousness. Automatic writing is, to a great extent, the outpicturing of the subconscious. And that is why, when you write unconsciously, you are writing down just what is within the mind, without, as it were, examining, but only discerning, without comparing, without judging, but just allowing the flow to take place, you empty the various layers of consciousness until such time as you reach the pure consciousness. It is only when you reach consciousness which is pure can you ever get anything of any value at all out of your automatic. Therefore, you see, but the great thing in automatic writing is this, that it enables your mind to be emptied out on all the various layers, to be exposed, all your various secret habits, your secret desires, your secret motives, and everything about yourself is written on paper. What a mess. It is said that suggestion and hypnotism is a cure for all these ailments. But in 40 years' practice, I have found that it is not so. In many cases, it only adds to the confusion of the pattern. For instance, take one who is a confirmed drunkard. Suggestion may be given, but if the counter-suggestion is stronger, there is no cure this way. But there is a cure, which we will see later. For as sure as the morning comes, with the stomach churning and a nervous quiver, the hands trembling, this acts as a more powerful suggestion than the verbal one given previously. And the result is that the belief that a hair of the dog that bit him will cure the quiver in the stomach and the hand trembling. How often have people tried then to get over their habit by suggestions? It may do for a while, but that is not the cure. You have got to understand the cause. Then when we unravel the cause, we find it will be removed. I have seen a person so bad with the drinking, that the only way they could bring the cup to their mouth was a thing like this. They got it round their hands, and they took the tumbler in their hands like this, and they drew it up this way to their mouth. That's the only way, because his hand was shaking like this, but the only way he could bring it up was steady like that. And that's not very long ago. Oh, brother, bad, bad. An emotional habit pattern. Do you think suggestion is going to eliminate the emotional habit pattern without some more scientific means of breaking it up? We see here that a habit has been established in the cerebellum, and this is carried in reflexes to the body. Therefore, suggestion alone is not the cure, because even under hypnosis, there are artificial inhibiting impulses creating. Or, on the other hand, there can be artificial stimulating impulses creating. In this way, part of the mind may be shut off, out of commission. Or, on the other hand, a part of the mind may be made artificially active. This prevents the entire mind and brain from working as a proper coordinating machine for the healthy stimulation of the body, brain, and mind. In a state of hypnosis, we can say that you are not all there. I am not saying that suggestion is not an aid to the cure. It is certainly not the cure that remains permanent. This can only be brought about by proper relaxation and divine reasoning, which we will see in our next series of lessons. We'll see clearly how this is done, step by step. In 10 steps, I will take you through a complete method, and you will find how wonderful. We can see that with conflicting emotion and habit patterns created in the brain and nervous system, which throws the whole organism into an uproar, a civil war is going on inside. This proves that our emotions partially hypnotize the functions of our bodies. There, you see, we are hypnotized by our emotions. Our seeing is reduced, our hearing is reduced, our feeling is reduced. The senses are reduced because of the emotional habit pattern that has caused self-hypnosis of these organs in the body. It produces this anesthesia which impairs your functions 50, 75, and sometimes nearly 100%. In my next lesson, we will see how progressive relaxation coupled with divine reason can cure. Once the self-implied technique is acquired and the habit muscle tension is relaxed, you break down the old habit pattern, and as the cerebellum asserts itself, the regular work given to it to do by the intelligence that created it is performed accordingly as the mind assumes a true attitude towards life. When you then free the consciousness from all the inhibiting emotional habit patterns, there is no longer a hindrance to the expression of life, because we ourselves have put life in a cage. And when we understand that, when we break down the bars and doors of the cage we created for ourselves, we will be free. It has been found that certain forms of breathing help to quieten the nervous system stimulated through emotion. But there is no room for this lecture for detailed instruction. This matter, we will deal with it later. There is one thing sure. When you acquire the balance of mind, brain, and body, you will speak with authority, with confidence. You will have that quiet, easy assurance, a calmness that nothing can move, because you will know and understand. The blusterer is always one who is covering up a weakness. You may be sure that there is a conflict going on inside. But this bluff is often unconscious. It is the habit pattern created through conflict. The conflict of two images in the mind. Conflict of the individual who feels afraid, feels inferior. He creates in his mind an artificial stimulus of confidence, of courage. Now, if you have fear on the one hand and you try to cover up with courage on the other hand, you're only affirming the inferiority and you're getting nowhere. Because the more you think of courage, the more you express fear. It's like a girl or a woman who's going to have a baby. She wants to get a girl. All the time she's feeling she's going to have a boy. And the more she wants a girl, the more she's afraid she's going to have a boy. So if she wants a boy, the more afraid she's going to have a girl. Or if the husband says, "No, I want a boy." And she says, "My job has got to be a boy," but she's all the time she's afraid it's going to be a girl. So you see, the whole trouble is that you have a double mind. One image superimposing the other. One time one is up and the other time one is down. Now that conflict is so strong sometimes that it becomes unconscious. With the fact that you have an excessive, what we call overconfidence, created by this type individual, a superiority conflict, is nothing more than an inferiority complex imposed, and that one is always there because it has not been dealt with. It has not been discerned, it has not been dealt with, it hasn't been seen how it has been brought about, and there it remains as the expression that superiority conflict of complex all the time there is a struggle going on, a deep struggle going on. And as sure as you're alive, that struggle going on is going to affect your nervous system so soon that you're going to have an ulcerated stomach, or you're going to have mucus colitis, or you're going to have something very serious wrong, and you do not know where it comes from. Then, when it happens to you, what happens again? The vicious circle takes place because you dwell upon it. You're afraid of it. You fear the very thing that you brought on yourself unconsciously. There is the vicious circle. I want to show you what you're doing. So when you eliminate these things, life itself, that is unconditioned, gives expression to itself. Take off the brakes, and the Father does the work. Do not criticize, but see the real passion behind the veneer. This is the way to free yourself from further conflict, because what you see in others is generally planted in yourself. Very few people are completely free from emotional conflict and habit patterns created by reactions to the external world. Our movements often betray our mental attitude. The chap puts his hand in his pocket, he wants to pay something out, and he puts it down on the counter and he keeps his hand on it as long as he can, so he doesn't want to part with it. And he stays there with it for a while, and then he takes his hand very cautiously from it. He finds he's got to part with it after all. Now that shows the type of mind there. A fellow who doesn't care, he takes the money and throws it on the table like, and there it goes. And there's so many different forms of mess. Closed fist means not much. An open hand means everything. Because of the fact the open hand gives you everything. That is the way to give it. Because you find you're getting everything. Fingers all represent something. Sometimes a person will do this. Now doing that, of course, is subconscious. All these other qualities that these hands, the fingers mean, subconsciously are closed and hidden. That is vision, that is humanity, that is beauty, that's expression, and that's wisdom. And in fact, subconsciously, we are always making signs according to our own feelings inside, what we are. The closed fist, you'll never get anything on the closed fist. Never. You'll never get anything from anybody who puts his hands behind his back until such time as you bring him forward by suggestion. Very acute suggestion. Very acute. Subtle. Quiet. Smooth. I will deal with that some other time. A person that is free will generally look you straight in the eye, and we should cultivate that habit. The shake of the hand also often denotes an attitude of mind. There is a piece of meat type of handshake, that sloppy handshake that no one likes. Then there is the crushing to pulp type, which is even worse. A truly friendly handshake is a firm, pleasant shake of a hand where you would like to linger long. Remember, the contact of the hand can reveal your nature. If you are aware of the unconscious habit patterns created through your mental and emotional state, you can change this pattern established in your brain and nervous system. And you're continually doing so. When people relax, they begin to change their whole nature. These habit patterns begin to break up because habit patterns is tension. Reduce the tension, break up the tension, and you break up the habit pattern. It is just that wonderful thing that nature does. for you when you take off the brakes. To feel perfectly relaxed in the presence of others is proof that a natural state is being re-established. Relaxation of nerves and muscles mean health. Those who are in tension in the presence of others often create trouble through what I call occupational anxiety. A person who is always in a state of anxiety and tension in the presence of others create what we call occupational anxiety, which produces similar effects to what I call an emotional habit pattern will do. It's in a similar thing. This state of affairs causes a change in the tissue structure, whereby organic conditions are often created. By following what I have told you, you will begin to express the true pattern of life itself. You will develop unconsciously, and you can still further develop it by doing the little things you previously left undone. Practice doing everything the right way at the right time. Do not procrastinate. We always throw the little things aside. Oh, I'll do that tomorrow. Time enough to do this. Then all the time there's something tugging you, say, you should do it, you know, you should do it, you know. And all the time something else says, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, it's all right. But when you take yourself in hand, doing the little things are most essential, because it's doing the little things that produce strong will and a strong personality. You're forced to do the big things whether you like it or not. The small things you can throw aside. That is ruining your will to do. Try and recognize the great truth that nature is always active, all the time, and she's doing the little things always. And nature is doing the little things that make the big things. And it's the little things in your life that really make the big things. When you know your condition and the cause of it, you are not so prone to bestow your attention upon it, thereby intensifying the trouble. You will know it is there, but it does not mean a great deal now. Then you face the way you want to go. These conditions are your experiences. Then let them be your driving power, not your stumbling block. How often are these conditions in your life your stumbling block? Experience is always a stepping stone. But if you bestow your attention upon your trouble severely with fear, you intensify it 100-fold. There are, in fact, 3 stages in every trouble. There is the physical, the emotional, and the mental. Physical trouble may only be 10%, but the emotional and the mental may be 90%. But the physical stands out so enormously to you that it becomes 100%, yet it is only 10% of your trouble. Can you understand now, then, how you can remove this emotional and mental effect of any trouble? By recognizing how to go about it, by realizing the truth about yourselves. If you're always bemoaning the fact that you are sick or you are weak, that your efforts have been destroyed, you are just seeking an escape. And when you realize that, then you will devote your energy to creative work and little or none to your self-imposed conditions. A great deal of sickness is nothing more than a desire to escape from something. And also, bemoaning the fact that you are weak is another escape from something, a desire to escape. But if you can discern the way you are trying to escape and why, you will free yourself from both. So you see that you will devote your energy to creative work and little or none to your self-imposed condition. I would like to call this surgery of the mind, where we begin to cut out the seeds of our emotional habit patterns, and the knife we use is divine reason coupled with scientific conscious relaxation. This is the finest lens we can ever use. In our relation with people and things, we gain experience. We get to know ourselves. If we discern deeply our thought action, our emotions, we will free ourselves from the habit pattern of greed, envy, cravings, and dependence upon people and things. We will no longer be dwarfs in a world created for giants. If then you can realize the importance of what I am saying to you, you will study these lessons carefully. You go over them again word by word, because I have not given you a quarter of what is in this lesson, no, not a hundredth part. You will find it out for yourself. And it is when you find it out for yourself, that is the secret. That is the means how you can overcome all your difficulties. If we are hypnotized by our emotions, we only find sorrow, fear and conflict, which is as pictured in our bodies, our affairs, our surroundings. When this is removed, things are seen as they truly are. The attitude of mind determines what your habit pattern is going to be. Then search and find what your attitude of mind is. Is it based upon reactions to outside world? Is it based upon fear, apprehension, desire? Or do these things fill your mind? Or is the great, mighty power that is in itself, perfect, expressing itself, influencing your mind from within? Are you allowing those influences of the spirit to manifest in your own mind? If you are, then you will find an avenue that will give you that true mental attitude towards all things external to the self, because you will know them for what they are. When we begin to realize that quality, that unlimited power we have to create, to do, that our efficiency is dependent upon our power of attention, we are no longer in bondage. But this is impossible where there is strong emotional conflict. You must see that confusion of thought is bound to create confusion in your environment and life. If you are caught up in the error, you will fail to see the truth. But when you see the truth, then the error dissolves away, because the error has no foundation. The cause and cure is in man's own self. Many of you in the past have been caught up in both truth and error, and this is the cause of much of your confusion. Truth and error, that is in the mind. Most teachers of truth are only dealing in images, not give you the truth. If you're caught up then in a prison, most people are in a prison, but they don't want to get outside the prison. They don't want to free themselves. They're afraid of freedom. Absolutely, utterly afraid of freedom. Now look into your own minds and see if you're afraid of freedom. Will you cast everything out completely that's in your mind outside and deal with it? Throw it out and be your real self? Oh no. You want a prison a little bit more comfortable than the one you had, so you can snooze there. That's exactly what most people do. And unless you are prepared to eliminate everything and stand alone, clear and distinct, see all these things are relative, and only that which is real in yourself stands alone. God Almighty, no other. Your God is a relative God. The life in your neighbor is separate and distinct to your own. That is how you live. Your God is a relative God. And the life in your neighbor is separate and distinct to your own. That's how you live. Look into your own minds and see how true it is. You could not reconcile the false teachings you heard with that inner conviction of reality, and not being able to discern the false, you could not know the true. But now all this has changed, yet the change will continue, for it is eternal in nature, and ever upward and onward progression, unfolding more and more of the wonders set before you. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. Therefore, if you can see clearly that the life in you and your neighbor is the same, then you will say, as Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. If you can dispense with everything, leave nothing except your bare principle of life, then you will find that life itself is the creator of all things, and you will be free. You will not be dominated by the outside world. You'll not be caught up in your conflicts. You'll not be caught up in your habit patterns. But you will unfold each layer of consciousness, all the stupid things that are there. They'll come to the surface. You'll discern them and know them, that they are relative. You'll not look upon them as right or wrong, or judge them, or compare them, but allow this free association with the things that have hindered you all your lives. Come to the consciousness, and then you will see what has hindered you in the past. In the recognition and realization of the truth, that what you discern then, you will see is outside yourself. You yourself will stand alone as the creator, one with the creator of all things, a creative principle existing in everyone, is the same. I and you and me, and we and God. There is no other truth. I am Alpha and Omega, beginning and end. Benediction. O lovely one, thou art lovely by nature, and thou hast given me thy nature so that I may express it and thus be free. Thou hast shown me to love others because thou lovest all. Thou hast taught me to be true to my word, as thou art true to me. Thou hast taught me how to make others happy because thou art the essence of happiness. Thou hast taught me to smile, for as I look upon my face, I see thy reflection. O lovely one, my happiness and joy I find in others, because there I see thy presence, my beloved.